Hello and welcome to the Take Us Directed podcast from the Global Health Policy Center at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. I'm Sarah Allender, Deputy Director and Senior Fellow. I'm joined for this episode by Dr. Michael Merson, Founding Director of the Global Health Institute at Duke University. He joined Duke in 2006 after a storied career that includes time at the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the World Health Organization, and Yale University. Dr. Merson recently published a new book with Dr. Stephen Inrig entitled The AIDS Pandemic, Searching for a Global Response, which chronicles the early years of the global response at WHO. On October 16th, we hosted an event with Drs. Merson and Inrig to discuss the book and the future of the global HIV/AIDS response. Please check out the CSIS.org Global Health Policy Center page for the webcast. We wanted to take the opportunity to hear a little bit more from Dr. Merson about his career. Welcome, Dr. Merson.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be with you.
First, can you tell us a little bit about what got you into medicine and public health in the first place?
My first exposure to medicine was as a young child. I hung out a lot in the office of my grandfather, who was a very dedicated cardiologist in Brooklyn. I used to play with his instruments, but more than anything else, I was so impressed by his compassion for patients and the care he gave to everyone who saw him. My interest in public health came about later in life when I had completed medical school and had opportunities to better appreciate during my residency training, and particularly in Baltimore, how much disease was affected by disparities, economic disparities, social disparities, and then later on had an opportunity to work early in my career in Nepal and in Bangladesh. And these experiences as well made me understand the importance of prevention. So this turned my career from a clinician to more of a public health practitioner and with a great interest in policy.
Public health has changed quite a bit since you started your career. We have this new global health field that's really emerged over the last 30 to 35 years. What did it mean to you back then when you first went to Bangladesh, and what does global health mean to you now?
In the 1970s, 1980s, and even up to turn of the century, many people called the field international health. And that really meant the rich countries helping the poorer countries. This turned around at the end of the Cold War and the realization that it would be much better to look at health in a truly global context. Whether you were a rich country or a poor country or a middle-income country, we could learn from each other by mutual understanding, by partnership, and by respect for culture and the differences in our populations. The field of global health now has really taken off, very much driven by the interest of students and faculty in academia, but also as we've come to appreciate the importance of health in global politics and global governance around the world.
You spent many years at the World Health Organization working on communicable diseases as well as leading the global program on AIDS. How have you seen the role of the World Health Organization change over time? What place does it have in this global health effort?
Well, I was in the World Health Organization from 1978 to 1995. And I'm sorry to say that the organization is not today what it was then. It's clearly lost some prestige. It faces real challenges. It has a structure and a mode of operation that was designed after the Second World War, and it hasn't changed since. And this creates problems, and it has been hard for the organization to reform. There have been many calls for reform, efforts at reform, but so far the kind of change that is needed hasn't occurred. This has resulted in the organization having a chronic deficiency in funds. They can't do what everyone wants them to do, so then their reputation suffers further. It's a vicious cycle. I'm hopeful that the new leadership that's come in maybe, hopefully, will make the reforms that are necessary, and we can have a rebirth of WHO as the world leader in global health. I don't see another option, but what WHO also faces today as a result of what's happened in the past few years is we have a resurgence of health as a priority for many other UN agencies. And we have a lot of new actors that have come on the block, if you like, in global health in the past two decades. And WHO needs to work with all of them if we're really going to achieve universal health coverage and equity in health.
Turning toward the U.S. for a moment, you were a member of the Committee on Global Health and the Future of the United States, with the National Academies of Medicine, which published its report in May 2017. What do you see as the critical issues in global health today?
So our committee was specifically tasked with making recommendations for what the U.S. government should do in global health. And there had been similar reports at the beginning of the Bush administration and the Obama administration, which of course we looked at, but times have changed in a number of ways. We called for prioritization in the U.S. government, assuming a flat budget. We hoped the budget wouldn't decrease. And the priorities we named were global health security and around the emerging infections that constantly threaten us, continued support to AIDS, TB, and malaria, continued prioritization for maternal and child health, and a serious focus on non-communicable diseases, where the U.S. government has given very little support. We in particularly emphasized cardiovascular disease because of the high presence of hypertension really in every country of the world, and also the early detection and treatment of cancer, specifically and particularly the infectious cancers, the cancers that are caused by viruses or bacteria. We also, unlike the previous reports, recognized that there were opportunities now in all areas that we needed to capitalize on. And here I'm referring to the great opportunities to catalyze innovation, particularly in product development and in digital health, the importance of recognizing the opportunities that exist now in financing of health. We called for much more emphasis on domestic resource mobilization and helping middle-income countries come up with the resources they need to fund their healthcare systems. And then we talked a lot about leadership, the need for the United States to maintain its leadership in global health and to partner with the various actors now in global health to continue to support WHO, assuming it made the reforms it needed to make, and to also recognize that there are some growing other powers in global health, particularly China, with their One Belt, One Road initiative, and India with their new initiative in Africa. We needed to partner with them as part of being leaders.
And speaking of financing and the U.S. government, what do you see as the kind of the best argument or a good argument to make to policymakers for why we should sustain U.S. investment in global health?
Our committee talked a lot about that. We are threatened now by the rise of populism, the anti-global rage, if you like, that we see in the U.S. and in some European countries in particular. I think we need to go back to basics and remind everyone why global health is so important. We can save millions of lives. Global health is important for our security because of the various organisms that threaten us and can be serious pandemics. Influenza worries us the most. We have to remember that health is important for development for economic growth of countries around the world. We also have to appreciate that global health has its security benefits beyond infectious diseases, but we believe that countries that are healthier are less likely to support terrorism, which of course we're greatly concerned about. And then, of course, global health has important humanitarianism aspects. We still have terrible famine in countries of the world where we need to help people dramatically to be able to not die of malnutrition, for example. So there are many reasons why global health is so important to all of us wherever we live, and we need to keep reminding people of that.
Looking back on your career, is there a time or an experience that kind of stands out for you as being particularly challenging or of note in all of your vast amount of experience that you've had?
Well, certainly one of them would be the AIDS pandemic, which is why I'm here with you today. If one looks at the history of the AIDS pandemic, there's a time that people either forgotten about or don't know, and that's when we didn't have treatment. For the first 15 years of the pandemic, AIDS was a death sentence, and this resulted in a tremendous amount of stigma and discrimination, denial, and this was a tough time to confront the pandemic. Of course, in the United States, there was a great groundswell from the activist community that managed to rapidly get antiretroviral drugs developed and then made available. The cost was quite high. It was about $15,000 a year, which denied these drugs to the poorer countries. And probably one of the greatest successes in my lifetime was the fact that we were able to bring those prices down to, at the time, $200, now about $75 a year for these life-saving drugs. I can't think of a greater achievement in global health than the fact that we've been able to save so many millions of lives in a relatively short period through that discovery.
You've recently stepped down as the head of the Duke Global Health Institute. What advice would you offer to those who are coming in now to this field?
The student enthusiasm in global health is just remarkable. I'm guessing, but there's probably close to 300 U.S. universities doing something in global health and more than 100 doing it in a major way. I think this generation of students really want to make a difference in the world. When students come to me and say, so how do I get started? Do I go to WHO? What's the best thing to do? My thought is always to go to the field and get experience in the real world. Understand what it's like to live in an environment where you have great disparities. Think about what we and you in particular can do to make a difference. And that really comes from, first and foremost, living the realities of global health.
Thank you so much, Dr. Merson, for joining us today. And thank you to those of you joining for Take As Directed. Please go to the csis.org Global Health Policy Center page for more information on our current content and events.